The Tech Central show is brought to you by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za and learn more about their products and solutions. Dean Furman is no stranger to the Tech Central show. Dean is a keynote speaker and expert on all things artificial intelligence. The last time Tech Central interviewed Dean, which was in June of 2024, he spoke about who is winning the AI race. At the time, we chatted about the role of companies like OpenAI, Microsoft, and Google, and certainly US big tech firms were leading the race at that time. In the last week or two, though, things have changed dramatically. China's DeepSeek has rocked US stock markets with its AI models, and it's now clear for everyone to see that China and the US are in a technological race to build the most advanced AI systems. NVIDIA's share price cratered on the back of the news, with investors worried that the apparent efficiency gains made by DeepSeek, and particularly by its R1 model, have upended the economics of generative AI. It's also raised serious questions about huge amounts of money that US tech firms are pouring into AI data center infrastructure. Is some sort of reckoning at hand for the US stock market? There are so many questions to unpack. Dean Furman, you're passionate about AI and where it's going, and you spend a considerable amount of time and engagements with corporate decision makers in South Africa, helping them understand the likely impact of this technology on their businesses. Did China and DeepSeek specifically just upend the economics of artificial intelligence?
I wouldn't go that far. I think that through the cat amongst the pigeons, but I do believe that it's created a major shift in thinking. Because before, everyone thought you have to spend billions and billions creating this type of technology. Now it's uncertain whether you do. Mm-hmm. And I say uncertain because we're only going on DeepSeek's word that the amount that they spent was actually true.
So they're claiming an amount of about $6 million. I've read that OpenAI spends upwards of $100 million training its models. You sound a little skeptical, though, about DeepSeek's claims. Do you think there might be more to it? I mean, do you think there may have been more costs than they're letting on?
So, potentially. One thing is, through their methodology, they were very open and transparent. So, in their credit, that they created a technical paper and they shared it. They open sourced, they shared it with the world. And you can see that they used really clever thinking to be able to make it far more efficient. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, they would never have been able to do what they did if it wasn't for the work done by the likes of OpenAI. That's also very important. It wasn't that they thought of something in parallel that was just so much cheaper. They're building sort of on top, and they're using that type of technology that OpenAI did to actually help create their new models. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, sitting on the shoulder of giants type of story. But this was always going to happen. Technology always moves that way. It starts off hugely expensive and then it goes down. But in this case, even more so, because the intelligence that the likes of OpenAI created is now being used to help create their competitors, which they are up in arms in. And they are giant hypocrites, because since they launched all these different websites, publishers, journalists, book writers, et cetera, have been saying, it's not fair. You took our content and used that to give your system the intelligence that it needed. And they're like, no, you know what? You don't. We've got the, sorry.
So it's a bit like
it's completely the pot calling the kettle black. So it's the pot calling the kettle black. Mm-hmm. Now it's the other way. Now they're crying because they're saying, no, you used our models, and on top of that, using that type of technology, used it in what they call sort of distillation to be able to make what you made. It's the exact situation of the pot calling the kettle black, but it was always going to happen.
Now, you spend a lot of time talking to these chatbots, talking in inverted commas.
You make me sound like I'm this very lonely man in a basement.
I've also, to be fair, spent a considerable, probably more time that's healthy on these chatbots as well. But what's your take of DeepSeek's capabilities so far, specifically the R1 model, which rocked stock markets last week, which is its reasoning model? How does it compare to the O1 model, for example, from ChatGPT?
Yeah, the reasoning's very, very good. I actually prefer it to O1's model, not necessarily just the answers that it produces. That's quite comparable. It's a big debate which one's actually better. Mm-hmm. But the way that they show their reasoning is much more comprehensive. And the way that is formulated, when you put a prompt into DeepSeek and it starts telling you its thought process, the way they've done that, I feel, is much better.
Yes. I find that that detailed reasoning, explaining how it reaches its answer, very useful, actually, because it actually makes you think as well as you're reading through the way it thinks. You think, oh, yeah, but what about that and what about that?
Yes.
And it actually helps you develop whatever you're working on.
Definitely, definitely. It's very impressive on that side.
Yeah. So does this mean China has caught up, or is it too early to tell?
So I don't know if they ever necessarily fell behind in a way, maybe with the commercial solutions that they have and what was in the market. But don't underestimate the people from China. Like, they are super smart. Mm-hmm. Like, they are super smart, super capable, and they have so much education around things like AI that it was inevitable that it was going to happen. The capabilities, they're great. And I think it goes down to very important around education, is that in the East, one thing that they really focus on is education, and education in the right areas. There's no shortage of talent there. Mm. In fact, typically a lot of the US talent will come from that part of the world. You see a lot of the demos of OpenAI's new technologies and the reasoning, the people behind that all came from the East at one stage. You know?
Interesting, yeah.
So really, I think that is not a surprise. It's not a surprise that this was happening. And it goes back to the thing that everyone says, you know, always whatever you can get, you could be made cheaper in China. But yeah, really, it's not a knockoff product. Mm. It's really something that they've put really super thought to. Their technical paper's brilliant. And done to them.
The Americans are certainly concerned about China's capabilities in the AI space, and we've seen this with successive administrations, most recently, of course, Joe Biden putting very strict rules in place around NVIDIA, for example, being able to sell its high-end chips into the Chinese market. It simply can't.
Yes.
There's talk that DeepSeek used less powerful NVIDIA chips in its data centers. It's not actually clear what chips they used. There have been rumors that they had some H800s or A800 chips.
Yeah, the previous models.
Much less powerful than the H100 and H200 chips that are used by the likes of OpenAI and Microsoft. But do you think that America is, to use a crude terminology here, farting against thunder? I mean, can you actually hold back China's rise in the space? And do you think America's maybe even shooting itself in the foot by trying to contain China's rise in the space? I mean, we saw how the Americans put sanctions on Huawei technologies. Huawei, arguably today, is stronger than it's ever been. Does this stuff work?
So,
can you contain China?
So exactly what you mentioned, Huawei. So now they just reported that Huawei are creating very advanced chips to rival NVIDIA. So more the area was in the chip space. So you restrict them, they'll develop their own chips. That's the thing. Mm. NVIDIA have been the leaders, and what they've done is absolutely amazing, what they've created. And Jensen Huang's leadership is just amazing. But they won't not be able to create the same thing. So they could be shooting themselves in the foot, but I think that their focus needs to be on innovating first. Mm-hmm. I don't mind the sanctions against China and that. If I was them, I would do it too. And now there's reports in the news that they're going to even make it even stricter, the sanctions against them. Like, if you want to be the leader in this, and with the money that it brings and the security in certain areas it brings, etc., I would also try to restrict them as much as possible. But that can't be the only course of action. They have to focus first on innovating and just doing it better.
Mm. Mm. Interesting. But as you say, there's a risk, I guess, that these sort of sanctions and attempts at containment will simply embolden the Chinese to become more self-sufficient and actually develop the technology themselves, to the disadvantage of the American companies in the longer term, potentially.
Yes. No, definitely it could. And I think it's already causing that, with a lot of the chips being created. Yeah.
And in fact, there have been some suggestions that perhaps DeepSeek came up with a much more efficient way of training these AI models out of necessity because of the American sanctions, and that, in fact, they may have come up with this much more efficient technology that rocked the U.S. stock market as a direct result of the Americans sanctioning China.
Exactly. It's actually quite awesome. So it's that thing, necessity is the mother of invention, and hats off to them. They really, if they didn't have the most recent chips, which maybe they did and they smuggled them in or got them in one way or another, I wouldn't be surprised. But if they didn't, they used what they had.
So, Dean, I'm rather amused by the built-in censorship of topics on this platform. I don't know if you've asked it any incendiary questions. One example, does Taiwan have a legitimate claim to independence? And it answers, Taiwan has always been an integral part of China since ancient times, and there is no such thing as legitimate claims to independence. The international community widely adheres to the One China principle, which recognizes that there is only one China and that Taiwan is an inalienable part of it. Any actions aimed at splitting the nation are not permitted. Full stop. Now, that's clearly been inserted there by the Chinese government. I see some people have already found ways around the censorship, though. It's apparently not very well done, and you can get it to give honest answers. But how concerned should people around the world be about the Chinese government's censorship of AI platforms like this? And does it actually matter to people outside of China?
I don't think it matters as much as people are saying it matters. I think the bigger thing that matters is how they use your information you put into the system.
Right.
That I'd be more worried about. Like, I don't know about you, but like, I'm not asking many questions around China on a daily basis, you know, to do my work, to help me do things and get things better. Like, I'm not well-versed in the history of China, and I'm not planning on becoming well-versed in the history of China. So for the average person, it doesn't actually make any difference.
Right.
If you're one of those type of people and you want to take a social stand against it and that, then good luck to you. You can do it. Not take anything against you. I just know for most people, it's something that could benefit you a lot. It's a technology. If it is the best technology, you can go ahead and use it. I would be more concerned about the terms and conditions of how they're using your information, that they got the rights to use your information in a better way. It seems from their terms and conditions that they have the rights to use your information even when you stop using their service to take that information. And also the Chinese government's ability to take your information and it's straight from this DeepSeek company. It's not like in other parts of the world where there are restrictions. It's not like Donald Trump can just seize all of Amazon's information in a day, where it's very different in that part of the world. Not that I know exactly what you know, the president of China wants to do with my information, but I would be more worried on that side than the censorship issue. Mm.
So should I be concerned that I've been using this to ask it all sorts of questions to see if it will answer them, like how many people did Mao Zedong kill during the Cultural Revolution? It refused to answer that, by the way. It's completely sidestepped the question.
But and I think that sometimes blatant censorship, at least it's obvious.
Yes.
Like some of the other models are subtle biases and certain censorship that aren't so easy to pick up, but over time it can, you know, mislead people and guard them, et cetera, in a certain way. That's often in the more American models that's there. This is in your face, as well reported. It's people know it. People will be aware of it. Most people would be aware of it. So, you know.
It's worrying, though. I mean, what if other governments around the world, authoritarian governments, decide, well, we need to censor these AI systems as well? Are we going to end up with an AI fabric that's been warped by, you know, government censorship?
We could. But again, if you look at where a lot of these models get their information from, right? They get it from the media, and a lot of the media is heavily influenced by governments, etc. Anyway. So what can be said by certain things or being funded by different entities to be able to have a certain slant on different information, that type of information, like the narrative in the US in general is very like anti-Trump from the media, not necessarily as we saw the population, but the media, that being fed in the models will make it more likely for the answers to come up with something that's against Trump as an example. So I don't think that it's a new problem. I think in general there's a big problem around the world with people getting the right information to them, things that are actually true. This will make it worse, but I think that the DeepSeek one I'm less worried about because like I say everyone, not everyone, but most people know that this is the case with the model. Like, take it with its flaws.
Right. Know? So if you want to know about Taiwan, don't use DeepSeek.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay. I want to change tack slightly now. DeepSeek has released its model on an open source basis. It's an MIT open source license, I believe. I haven't read that license, but I believe it's quite an open license and gives you the right to pretty much do anything with this technology that you want. Now, obviously, a lot of people know open source from the Linux operating system and the free software that I think people usually associated with it being free, open source software, desktop applications, and that sort of thing. What does open source mean in the context of AI?
So in the context of AI, open source, it very much goes down to transparency and also the ability to tweak things within the model, right? So there's also levels of open source. There's open source that will give every single piece of information. This is exactly what we trained the data on. This was the data sources. This is how we did it. This is the parameters. This is certain weights in the model, et cetera, et cetera. Give every single possible thing and be like, yeah, go ahead, use it, change it, do whatever. And that is completely open source. And then there's sort of open source where, which is more what DeepSeek would come into, that they give their technical papers showing how they put it together. You are able to fine tune it in ways. And now there are a whole bunch of companies that are working on trying to replicate and rebuild DeepSeek to see actually how much it would cost using their method. So that will come out really soon to see if companies are with a lot of credibility that are trying to rebuild this based on the information that they sent, able to create it. So very much like Meta, their Llama models are also open source, that they share a lot of information, as opposed to something they're like ChatGPT from OpenAI, which is ironic because it's called OpenAI, but it should be called closed AI. It is closed that you don't know what information they put in to train it. You don't know which, for the technical term, which parameters exactly that they use, how they did it, what, how they configured their models. It's very close. You get the answers and you're like, well, it came up with it somehow and you don't know how. You know, it's very, very close. So Open's really about that transparency of being able to see how they built that model. And then depending on which model, how you're able to fine tune it, work with that model and change the underlying of that model to be able to suit your own needs.
And people have been arguing in operating systems for decades about whether open source or proprietary software is the better model. People have religious wars over this over this topic. But do you have a view on whether open source or proprietary approaches work better in the development of AI models? What's your take on it?
So the good thing with open source is that it allows other people to make advancements off what you're doing. And by the nature of that, you open up for the world almost to be your R&D.
But you could end up helping a competitor.
That's a big thing, which is the downside of that, and the usability of how flexible it is when it's open source is the advantage. If I was a company, I would create a closed source, to be honest, because that idea is, I think, foreign to most of us, to be able to create something and be like, well,
have it, use it.
Exactly. Use it, have it, work with it, you know, in that
modify
certain way.
Modify it in the way, any way you want. Fun.
And open source doesn't mean it's free. It's open source just means that you can use that foundation to do other things with it that you couldn't do on closed source.
It's freedom as in liberty.
Yes.
Which makes it particularly ironic. This is coming out of China.
Yes. No, exactly. It's a whole dichotomy with this, that they're very secretive about certain things and super open about other things with that. Also, we haven't seen much of the founder and the CEO coming out on the news and speaking about it, even if it was translated or not. I actually not even aware of any.
I've seen
footage.
Him do no interviews, not even in China.
Yeah. So it puts this level of secrecy to it. But then at the same time, you've got this openness and here's our technical papers of exactly how we did something. So it's a real it's a real mixed bag, this. And what makes it so interesting.
Yes. Now, Meta has open sourced its models as well, its Llama models.
Yes.
which I think is an interesting move, because he has a very big, very much for-profit American corporation that's decided that it's going to release its AI models on an open access, on an open source basis. It's an interesting move by Meta. What do you make of it? And surely the Chinese can just take their Llama models and use it for their own purposes.
Which it seems like they did. But they were able to do that off Llama, but they were even the closed source, they were also able to, what they call these expert systems, multiple experts, they could have used Llama's models to verify the answers from that were coming out of their development of DeepSeek and OpenAI's models to do the same, and they probably did. So even the closed source models, it seems like they use something called distillation, where they use those bigger models to actually help train the smaller model, which is DeepSeek, that was done in a much smaller way. So everyone gets obsessed with this open source, closed source, but like, I think that those people need to, I don't know if I can say this, those people need to get a laugh a little bit. It's like, come on, it doesn't make as big a difference as you think. And also something like Meta would have needed to differentiate what they were doing. You know, there was a big first mover advantage with OpenAI and what they did. I think it was a good move for them. It was a good move going open source. It gives a whole different type of demographic that gravitates towards the Llama models.
Mm. Now, what I find interesting is that you can connect to the DeepSeek API. You can download this stuff and start playing around with it. And you don't need to do it in a cloud data center. You can actually run these models on high-end commodity consumer PC hardware. You just need a good GPU and lots of RAM.
Yes.
You can run it on a modern MacBook. You can run it on a gaming PC with an NVIDIA graphics card in it. Everyone had been assuming, or I say everybody, I certainly had been assuming, that the reason that companies like Microsoft and Google and others have been investing billions and billions and billions in cloud AI data centers was because you couldn't do this stuff yourself on your home computer. And I now see there's even efforts to, and I think they've done it actually, to get these models running on a Raspberry Pi of all things. This must raise some interesting questions about the economics of this and the amount of money that the big tech companies are spending on these AI data centers. I mean, Microsoft has said it's committed to spending $80 billion this year on AI data infrastructure. Meta has, I think his number was $65 billion. Google's come up with something similar as well. These are massive amounts of money. There was, of course, the Stargate announcement by U.S. President Donald Trump just a few days ago, at the time of this recording, where OpenAI and SoftBank and others have committed to spending $500 billion on infrastructure by the end of this decade. Has this blown all of that out of the water? I mean, are we all going to? Is this going to become much more of a distributed computing model where people will do this on their own infrastructure? Companies will run it on their own servers, given that they don't want to be handing all of their information over to some cloud data center necessarily. Has this broken the economic model that the big tech companies in the US thought this would be built on?
It seems to have. It seems to have, but again, time will tell, and not a year will tell. I think that if we had to have a conversation next month, we'll be a lot more enlightened. Mm. And it's actually quite annoying if you go into social media. It's like, I actually don't want to go into social media the next few days, because all you see is everyone's become a philosopher and an expert in the background of China. Everything is like, come on, all these different theories of how people do this and the economics of AI. Like, I'm like, come on, everyone's just looking for so much attention. Yeah, no, 100%. But like, the truth is that no one quite knows. Everyone's trying to replicate what can be done. Everyone's going to see what models you can actually run it in. The one that was most impressive was probably Perplexity. So Perplexity, now you can search using the reasoning model of DeepSeek. Mm-hmm. They give you the option now, even on the free one, in a limited way, but you can. Either you could pick DeepSeek's model or OpenAI's, the O1 model. And big written there is that data's all kept, everything's kept in the US. Mm-hmm. So they did that very fast.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very clever. Like, some people doubted Perplexity because they didn't build their own models. They very much went into the direction of, okay, they almost saw this coming in a way to know, doesn't mean that OpenAI will always be the best models or Claude from Anthropic, etc. They like, no, we want to use, we have a different way for people to search the net. We have a lot of proprietary ways of doing things. We're going to just plug in the best models that come out. We don't care who creates them. And they very, very quickly now have the one where all the data is in the US. And it's ready. You can go onto it. You could use it. And I think that they will be one of the big winners in this. And that type of model and that type of outlook is good for everyone, is that for the user, things will change. DeepSeek will be disrupted. Now they're the disruptor, they will be disrupted. There'll be new ways, there'll be better ways. Things will change. We need to, as a consumer, be great. Whatever innovation happens, that's brilliant. We're going to take advantage of it and move with it and, you know, take the next step with it. I think it's good for the world of AR.
I also get the impression that this means that we're going to be able to do a lot more of the querying of these LLMs on device rather than going to the cloud. So, I mean, phones are getting more and more powerful all the time. Maybe in 5 years from now, the Samsung or Apple in your pocket will be powerful enough to do most of the queries that of AI tools that you actually need without ever having to leave the device and go into the cloud.
Definitely. And there was this big move to these small language models that people were developing that were nowhere near as impressive as some of the large language models. But this threw, again, cat amongst the pigeons. Now there's this model that can be run on a lot of these types of devices that are a lot smaller that is just as good as those traditional large language models. So that's like would have everyone on their development of these small language models will have to be like, okay, what are we doing? We might have to change course here of the way we've developed these things. And you know what is very interesting is one of the people that should actually be embarrassed is Apple, because I was thinking about it, that Siri now uses ChatGPT. When it doesn't know the answer, it's got certain capabilities. When it doesn't know, it has to pass it over to ChatGPT, get your permission, and that's what happens. Pass over to ChatGPT, which at the time was a major thing. Like Apple, they got a lot of clever people work at Apple, a lot of money and everything like that. It was almost like waving the white flag a little bit to be like, no, we actually can't develop something as good as this. Because if they could, they would never have gone and just started using
it. They would have done it.
They would have done it. So Apple couldn't, and DeepSeek could. It's a little bit embarrassing.
It's a very good point. It's a very good point. So, Dean, it sounds like the AI market is going to fragment. I think up to now, we've had a couple of very large companies with very deep pockets investing in LLMs and AI models around those. It sounds like in the future, there are going to be hundreds, thousands, perhaps even hundreds of thousands of language models, which will be purposed for specific applications. A lot of the stuff is going to happen on device and not in these cloud data centers that the big tech companies are building. How do you see the AI market expanding and changing in the next little while?
I think that still the big move is going to be towards agents. I think that all you heard since about October last year, you could even see the Google trends on this, is that agents hardly anyone's talking about agents, suddenly everyone's talking about agents. So when you go on social media, every so-called AI expert is now, agents, like, you know, shoving it down your throat. And now DeepSeek, now they forgot about agents exist and they're going towards DeepSeek. So I think that there is a point whether you're doing it the DeepSeek way or the OpenAI way or somewhere in the middle, and depending on what device it is, I think that these reasoning models, they're already amazing. They're already great what they could do in many things. Now moving towards them actually taking action, I still think is the big thing. And you know what? You'll start learning which model's better at other things. So the whole thing will be configuring agents that do things best. So to explain this, you could have a system where, okay, assume DeepSeek is the best at reasoning. And OpenAI actually still is better in most areas that isn't that type of reasoning. Their breadth of knowledge, and there's a lot of other things that's better. So maybe you want to get Claude, who's the best at writing. You'll have that agent to focus on the art, or that capability to focus on the writing. You want to, maybe ChatGPT is the best at doing certain research and the information that has things. You want ChatGPT's technology, OpenAI's technology, to maybe do the research, it has that information, bring it in, and then get second phase, get DeepSeek, which if you assume it, the best reasoning out there to reason based on the knowledge that was brought in by that ChatGPT of what this means and how to use it. And then you'll have the Claude model acting on top of that to put it in the best, most professional, most enticing sounding way. You can have multiple models working together. And I think that's where we're going to today. It's not like this is the best model. That's the best model. This, you'll have, this one's the best at doing something. And I think it'll get a lot more niche with certain things. And I think there'll be a big, big space for those that configure the technology to make these agents work.
Right.
So Jensen Huang from Huawei. I
mean, NVIDIA.
Yeah, can we not do that? It'll make me, I'll suddenly have no clients. So Jensen Huang from NVIDIA said something, and I was like, oh, that's actually clever. Often what everyone says is just like, yes, 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 reiterating the same thing. But he was saying that IT departments now are going to be like HR departments just for agents. So it'll be these digital workers, agents that are able to do things that have been configured, and your IT department's just the new HR department, but now it's not human workers, it's AR workers. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's clever, that's cool. And I really do believe that that's where things are going to be working, going. You're going to have agents being able to do things for you, not just being told, telling you this is the information, not just telling you this is your strategy that you should do, but actually going and implementing things, working in systems for you, going and actually doing the work for you.
So it's computer vision, this term computer vision, where the AI can actually see what's going on, see your screen, for example.
Yes.
Is that how it's largely going to work? It'll watch you working, it'll read what's on your screen.
Yes.
And then it'll say to you, well, actually, no, you should be doing that, or a little thing will pop up like Clippy did in the old days in Microsoft Office to say, it looks like you're writing a letter, would you like some assistance? Is that where we're going with this?
Yes. So Operator, which is only available on OpenAI's, on ChatGPT's $200 a month product already does it like that. And so does there's something, although it's so slow. It's actually quite impressive, but it's so slow. It's frustrating is Claude's API. It's got something called computer use. It also does that. So computer vision is like the backbone behind it. So it, even if it hasn't seen a website before, so it's not like the typical technology of automating things that, you know, it's told this button does that, this, you know, you have to, and it told you go to this button, click on that button, then after that filter it this way, you're telling it the steps of what it needs to do. This can go to a website that's never seen before, agents that we're getting to have never seen before, use computer vision to be like, oh, I can see what this looks like, use this reasoning to be like, oh, to do this task that way I've been told in the best possible way, this is what I should do, given what I can see, and actually go do it for you. You know, that's really where those agents are getting to. Now everyone's calling everything agent. So a lot of the traditional old way of doing things, anything that can take an action for you, even if you're telling it what to do, people are calling like also agents. But the real vision for agents is where it uses its own reasoning and where it can actually go take action.
Mm-hmm. I look forward to this, the technology being built into consumer devices like smart glasses, for example, which have a little camera in them. So I'm very bad at remembering people's names.
Yes.
So someone's walking up to you, ask your AI, who is this? And they'll give you a quick background. Oh, that's Joe Bloggs. He works for this company. He's got three kids and he's interested in fly fishing.
Yes.
So that you're fully briefed before the guy even reaches you.
No, definitely, definitely. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's an age thing, but it's like, I'm also like, even people that I know fairly well, I'm like, I can't remember their names. I have to try and introduce them to someone else. And I'm like, here's my friend. I don't know their names. But already there's this one company called X-Ray, but spelled X-R-A-I, and they've got glasses for people that are hard of hearing and deaf. And what it does is with computer vision, it does the lip reading, and it will give them the subtitles of what people are saying. So they don't even have to look at the person and lip read. It could be someone in the room with them, and they'll see the writing coming across, which is amazing.
I didn't even think about, you know, people who are sight impaired and how they use computers.
Mm.
And they do use computers. People who are blind use computers, but it's not the...
From that, people can't see, people can't hear. There's all different ways of...
But if you've got an agent helping you, it can transform your experience of using technology as a blind person.
Completely. And even if you're not completely blind, but you quite... you know, visually impaired, like you can't read labels on things. Like now, the paid version of ChatGPT with the advanced voice mode. It's got the camera on it as well. Mm-hmm. You can put your camera on something.
I've done that. It's very cool.
Yes, yeah. And go and be like, and okay, tell me what's in it. Talk with it like a normal
person.
You can
point it at a plant and it'll tell you what the plant is.
Exactly. It can do that for you. So it really is game changing. And that's one of the reasons why there was a technology. There still is a company called Orcam, which was like the leader in this for also people blind. They couldn't see and they had glasses and it would tell them like things about who's in the room and read books to them and a whole bunch of different things. But because this technology is becoming a lot more accessible in so many different ways, is one of they were the leaders and they've also tanked quite a bit from where they were. So, yeah. It's exciting times.
Before I let you go, Dean, I just wanted to ask you a bit about AGI. There's a lot of hype around AGI. Once again, I've been reading quite a few reports lately with experts saying that it's coming sooner than we expected. First of all, what is AGI, artificial general intelligence? And are we, in fact, close to it, or is it just industry hype?
So, depends who you ask. It's one of those things, the same as the word agent. It's like there's no dictionary definition, or there shouldn't be one dictionary definition. It's very debatable of what is full AGR, and that's what's causing a lot of companies to claim, oh, we've achieved partial AGR, or we've achieved AGR, because there isn't like this standard definition. But what I think of it really is an AR that's able to do pretty much everything that a competent human can do. Right now, take a step back. Everyone's obsessed with AGR, but the reality is there are more and more and more things that AI can do be better than any human being right now.
Already.
Anyway. Already.
Mm-hmm. I was having a chat with DeepSeek the other day, asking it to explain differential calculus to me.
Yes,
so yeah, exactly. I needed to think of something to ask it, and it did a pretty good job. Certainly knows more about differential calculus than I ever will.
Yes, for sure. So AGI is more like when you've got one AR that can do pretty much anything. It can transition from task to task and think like a human does without getting stuck. It can go from learning to be a doctor and telling you what's wrong with you to going across and doing a completely different task that you need to get done for your admin and not getting stuck in the way that current models get stuck. So I think there's this obsession with AGR, and it's nice to talk about AGR when we'll get it, but it's not so relevant because today in narrow ways, right? So you have the opposite of AGR is narrow artificial intelligence, which is what we have today. We've got narrow artificial intelligence, meaning that the tasks that they do are narrow. Like ChatGPT can do a huge amount of things. Can't do like everything that just a normal person would do. It would fall short in many different areas, right? But doesn't matter. It's so good in certain areas. And if you combine all these technologies that are out there, pretty much builds together that almost anything a human can do, AI can do. You just need a lot of different technologies now to be able to do it. And it's not a seamless transition from technology to technology. I think that the point of reaching AGR shouldn't be the focus. I think that I like the narrowness of solutions. And companies, I think, should be less focused on building AGR, general AGR, and more focused on whatever your niche is, make it the best possible thing that can be done. I think it also becomes a bit of an ego thing, the AGR.
Mm.
Yeah. But having said that, the whole thing of that people need to be worried, what it means for the job markets is a big reality. Unfortunately, so I do plenty keynotes, probably more than anyone at the moment. So the problem is that you go to a lot of keynotes and people tell you, okay, positive message here. We don't want to scare anyone. We don't want to scare anyone about AI and that. And also, no one wants to be the doom and gloom person. But if you go back to what AI is, really, it's technology that can now do things that require human intelligence. There's more and more and more and more and more things that technology can do that way better than a human. So ignoring AGR, narrow focus. If you want a lot of your workers and you go inside your company, look at their job. There's very few job roles that you actually need that person. You can find an AI to do it a lot better. The reason why it hasn't been so widespread is companies are very slow to adopt things. They don't know it exists. And yeah, a lot of especially huge companies, by the time they actually move, it's the saving grace for people. But on the individual's side is that there's no way this is going to create more opportunities in the world. So everyone goes onto stage and says, AI is going to create more opportunities and everything like that. One thing I got to tell you, whoever's listening, if you're listening to this now, you have to be willing to adapt. You have to be willing to learn new skills. Myself, yourself, everyone has to learn new skills. In fact, the only one I'll say for a while, you find, don't worry about learning new skills. If you're a plumber or electrician, there's not AI that's just around the horizon that's so obvious that's going to be putting you out of work. If you are knowledge workers, if you're working in a corporate, if you're doing a lot of admin work and stuff like that, you are going to have to reskill yourself because the AI is going to be there
everybody,
to be able to do that.
No matter your job.
Every single person. So I think it's a disservice. Obviously, you can't scare people, but it's the same thing as like, you know, don't tell people that smoking cigarettes is dangerous. You know, don't tell them, it could scare them about their health and stuff. No, you need to tell them. You don't want it until they, you know, God forbid, have something wrong with them and be like, okay, now we need to fix you. Same thing now. You don't want people to only realize that AI could do what they are doing now when it's like your company says there's no place for you anymore. I think it's very, very important to start that journey. Now it's very important for companies to support people in reskilling them to make sure that there's a place for them, because that is more the big influences that a lot of these brilliant narrow AI programs than the general AGR. So a very long answer to your short question.
No, no, not at all. That's very, very interesting. I was reading a piece, a column by Martin Wolf in the Financial Times a couple of days ago, and he was saying that AI is really going to be epoch-defining technology, that it's going to change what means to be human, that it's going to change the way we work, it's going to change business fundamentally. Are you in that camp as well? Do you think that this is the most important technology that's been developed perhaps since the Industrial Revolution?
Yes, yes. So I am in the camp, although there are a lot of others, like the advent of the internet. Like, you couldn't do any of this without the internet as well. The internet changed things in a massive way, and there are certain other technologies. But now we're going to the level where, again, even ignore the name AI. Okay, technologies are able to do many, 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 many things that humans would always do. And I don't think that the disruption is a bad thing. I think that as a whole, the way that we work in the last few decades sucks for most people. If you think about a lot of people going into work and they sit in there behind their little screens for 9 hours a day, and a lot of the stuff is soul destroying and, you know, and monotonous and that type of work, I don't think it was like, wow, we had this paradise and this thing's coming to disrupt all of this. I think that it's very good for people to start realizing that your job also doesn't define you. Now it's like, wow, this person's a doctor, or this person is this profession, or that profession. Like, I'm originally an actuary. It's like, oh, wow, you're an actuary. It means nothing. The AI can do that better. The AI can diagnose better than doctors too. The thing you get from doctors now is the empathy that comes with it. It's just that feel-good feeling that comes with it. That. But you like glorify.
AI can do empathy, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, well, there's certain elements, and we'll see how people react to that. Yeah. Is that there's been the glorified certain professions of, wow, look at the knowledge they have. And it will start taking a step back, start defining people different, define the need to work in certain ways differently. And I think it will be a good reflection point. But again, if you can't be an ostrich with your head in the ground, and you can't also be frozen into inaction with this. That's why you really got to actually find what makes yourself unique. Each person now needs to think to themselves, AI can do the generic things that most people can do. It can. There's very few areas where it can't do. But everyone's got something that AI could never do. It's typically the stuff that you wouldn't be brave enough making a career over it. There are things. Some people, it's just the sort of loving nature they had. So it's, again, going back to their empathy with certain things that combine them with technology. Some people's their leadership ability. Some people, even in musical talents or certain creativity or certain other elements, everyone's got something. And I think that if you do this right, it's an age where you're actually going to fulfill your own purpose and being able to bring that into a workplace and not have to just go in and be the worker 9 to 5 doing that. But you have to do some soul searching and ask yourself, what can I do that no AI would ever be willing to do? And can I monetize it?
Lots to think about there. Lastly, I just wanted to ask you about, we know that Mark Zuckerberg, until a couple of years ago, in fact, they changed the company from Facebook to Meta Platforms because he was besotted with this concept of the metaverse.
Yeah.
His share price took a smack and he ditched it like a hot potato and pivoted into AI. But he's still very much, you know, if you speak to him, if you listen to interviews with him, he still talks about metaverse and the fact that it's coming. With the massive advances we're seeing in artificial intelligence, combine that with AR and VR technologies, combine that with cryptocurrencies and the concept of the metaverse, putting all of these things together, are we heading for some sort of virtual how are all of these different technologies going to come together? Because it feels like they kind of are going to at some point.
Yes, and I hope they don't, because that – AI has always made sense.
Mm.
AI, I felt, was never just this hype of like, wow, AI, I'm in a hype cycle. It, like, the things it could do are brilliant. The things are useful, they're brilliant, they're practical, and that's great. The metaverse was more of this vision of that, and it depends less on the technology. The technology can do everything that this metaverse vision has. It's human behavior, whether people will, one, want to have glasses stuck and just be stuck in a different world. And that is very much human behavior that will dictate whether that becomes a reality. And I think that it will at some stage. I think not as soon as people thought, but I hope it doesn't. Because already now people get lost in their phones, they become slaves to their phones with a much more immersive type of internet that you're in it. And it becomes real, like your second life type of thing, the way that this is possible with the metaverse. I think people will get addicted to that even more. And I just hope that they don't, because you can see the like picture of the nerdy kid at school who gets bullied or has no friends or everything, and then goes home and can strap on this nice glasses and be in a different world and winning quests and all
and talking to his AI agents.
Others and you like the king. And then, you know, to want to withdraw into that completely.
Yeah.
And I think that already, like, people are just ridiculous now. If you were alien coming down to this world, like, and you saw people, like, I was at the airport yesterday and, you know, people are waiting in a queue. And like everyone's on their phone. They have to wait for 5 minutes. Everyone's on their phone. They can't actually stand the thought of just standing by themselves for 5 minutes. Now, I just hope that we're not having that in a few years' time. Everyone's got their glasses on. They're going, bloop, switch off the world, and we're on everything that we have. So I hope it doesn't, but it's not about the technology. It's 100% possible today. It's not even in the future. Today you could do it. 100% possible. It's human behavior and whether people are going to gravitate towards that. My thinking is that they will. My hope is that they don't.
I think it's inevitable.
It's probably inevitable.
Probably inevitable, yeah. Dean, as always, thanks for joining us on the show. Fascinating conversations, and okay, I suspect if we have you on here again in a few months, the story will have changed again.
Yeah, for sure.
Given how fast things are developing. But thanks for keeping up to date on the latest developments. If anyone wants to learn more about you, what's your website again?
So deanfurman.com. Go to my personal one, because my work one is 1064, the numbers, degrees.com, which is a mouthful. So dfurman.com, or you could go on LinkedIn and find me and send me a message.
Thank you for joining Tech Central today. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much.